so honored to be with all of you this morning. I have known Cynthia for many years, as she said, and I feel like every year that I know her, she becomes more and more one of my very favorite humans. And I think you probably know what I'm talking about. I'm so grateful that you all get to be blessed by her. But equally, I am glad that she has the opportunity to be blessed by you, because I know what a gift you are to her, because over the last 10 years, that is what I have heard from her, is how much you have meant to her. So thank you for loving her well. Thank you for what you mean to the city of Houston and to Churches of Christ. I bring you greetings from BAML Church of Christ on the north side, and I'm so honored to be here with you today. Well, our text today comes from Genesis 28, and it centers around the person of Jacob. Being a preacher's kid and having grown up hearing all of these stories in the Bible and all of these stories about Jacob, you would have thought that I would know better than to name one of my children Jacob. My Jacob is 7, and he is intensely curious about the world, which means he finds ways to get himself into all kinds of trouble. We are inventing ways to get into trouble every day, it feels like. He is the reason for all of my gray hairs that my children love to point out to me every day. He is the reason we can't light our fireplace anymore, because he will throw things into it. He is the reason I have to continue childproofing my house. It's not because we have a toddler at home, which we do. It is for the 7-year-old. He's no longer able to have scissors, because he cut his bedsheet in half in order to create a pocket to sleep in. Thankfully, BAML is a very loving and grace-filled church, because he has shot a slinky into a communion tray as it went past. He has lined up plastic dinosaur skeletons along the back of the pew. And most recently, he sent a communion cup sailing down the banister of the stairway in the middle of service. Some of you have a child like this. Some of you were a child like this. And some of you may be an adult like this. And if you're sitting next to that person, you just keep one eye on them while you pay attention with the other one. From experience, I can share this with you. And our thoughts and prayers are with you if that's you today. But when I read about the biblical character of Jacob, I can't help but chuckle, because should I have known better than to use this name? Maybe, maybe not. The biblical Jacob is, like my Jacob, a second-born child. He's technically a twin, but because he was born second, his brother Esau receives all of the privileges and the rights afforded to the firstborn. And so Jacob finds himself trying to work out his identity. If you've ever lived in the shadow of an older sibling, it's kind of that feeling of, who am I? Trying to work out who he is. And what he does is he learns to survive by manipulating people and circumstances in his favor, because that is how he knows to move through the world. And as a result, he manages to be at the center of a lot of conflict and turmoil, and he burns a lot of bridges along the way. So right before the story we're going to read today, Jacob has stolen the birthright and the blessing that belonged to his brother Esau. And Esau is so angry, rightfully so, that he announces that when their father dies, he has intentions to kill Jacob. He does not hide his intentions. So we're reading in Genesis 28, starting in verse 10. Jacob is on the run, fleeing from his brother. And that's where we pick up. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel. This is the word of the Lord. So Jacob has been trying to work out his identity for his entire life. And he has spent so much of his life running towards conflict, running away from conflict, chasing his identity and trying to figure out who he is. And I feel like it's one of those dreams where you're running towards something, but the more you run, the harder you run, the farther away it gets. Have you had that dream? That's how I imagine Jacob's life to have felt up to this point. And now he finds himself in a deeply difficult place because everything is stripped away. Protection, possessions, family. He has tried so desperately to forge a path for himself on his own, and the result is that he has ruined relationships. He has nothing left. But he stops here in this place. He stops running. And when Jacob stops running, when he stops moving, when he is not only still but asleep, so he is completely powerless to do anything, God shows up. And God says to him, "I am your identity. Your identity is found in me. Stop running. Stop searching. Let me tell you who you are." And he gives him a promise. And Jacob is so overwhelmed by this encounter with God that he can only respond, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." I spent a lot of my life growing up in the church trying to do things in order to experience the presence of God, because I heard a lot about experiencing God and the presence of God being in your life, and I thought maybe if I just prayed enough, or maybe if I read my Bible more, or maybe if I did enough service projects, maybe God would show up. Like I could conjure him up by doing certain things or living a certain way. And I prayed a lot of prayers asking for God to show up in my life. But looking back, I wonder if it wasn't that God wasn't there, but perhaps I was too busy trying to do things to get God to show up that I wasn't aware of his presence that was already with me. God is there in the stillness and the quiet, like Elijah talks about, like a whisper. But that is a really scary place to be sometimes. And I think sometimes we're afraid to be there. In that place where Jacob was, where everything is stripped away, especially with our American mindset. Who even are you if you're not doing something? How do we know who you are if we don't know what it is you are doing? One of the first questions people ask when you meet someone, "Hi, what's your name? What is it that you do?" Right? What can God do if you're asleep? But surely the Lord is in this place, in the stillness. Some of you know, and some of you may not, that a year and a half ago, my family's world came apart. My husband of almost 14 years went to sleep and didn't wake up. And overnight, I became a solo parent of three kids who at the time were 10 years old, 5 years old, and 10 months old. In times like that, there is an overwhelming quiet. You know that phrase, the silence is deafening? That's how it can be. And there's a flurry of activity around you, like there's things to do that day, the next day, in the weeks and the months to come. But at the same time, everything screeches to a halt. I've been in this place where everything is stripped away. I have been in this place where there's no running. There's just stillness. And sometimes in an experience like that, it feels like you're in limbo, like you're in this surreal in-between dream space like Jacob was. And you're not even sure who you are. And I think maybe some of you have been there too. And if you haven't yet, you will, because grief and loss and life change are a part of being human, and they are a part of loving other human beings. But here's what I can tell you. There has not been another year of my life in which I have more often said, "Surely the Lord is in this place." And it's not because my faith is strong, because my faith is not always strong. It's not because I prayed a lot, because I hardly prayed at all during that time. It's because that is where God meets us, where you stop running. From day one in our family, there have been countless moments, interactions, circumstances, the presence of certain people in our life that came at just the right time. The ways people have surrounded us and cared for us and shown up for us in ways I never asked for or expected. We had to buy a garage freezer because of all the casseroles. So many casseroles. Half of the Christmas presents under our tree that year were from absolute strangers, people I had never met. And it is so overwhelming when the goodness of God is on display in such an unexpected time. What do you do with that? And I found myself over and over again just saying, "Surely the Lord is in this place." It is a difficult time right now in our society to be a person who claims the name of Christ. Christianity has been so weaponized, so leveraged, and has caused so much hurt to the point where it's tempting to walk away. I know, because I've felt that way, and I've sat with a lot of people who have felt that way. But by continuing to show up like you are today, every time you walk through those doors, or you open up your laptop, you turn on your TV, you join in online, that is not a small thing, because communities of faith matter. Because when you show up, you are saying, in spite of it all, "Surely the Lord is in this place." By continuing to love people, by continuing to walk in the footsteps of Jesus, you are testifying to the world, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and in this place, and in this place, and in this person." You believe that. And when you show up for people in those quiet and lonely places, when you meet them there, you are saying, "Surely the Lord is in this place too, especially this place." What a powerful statement that is. Sometimes you just need someone to sit with you as a reminder that God is here. And that is a gift. So my prayer, my blessing for you is this. May you grow more and more in your awareness of the presence of God, and may you continue to bless the world with it. Amen.